Now let's double check, all right? Testing, 4, 6, 8, 10. Okay, now this is July 27th. Charles Rust interviewing Dana Shrupp on July 27th, 2005. Conducting this interview in Dana Shrupp's home around his dining room table. So Dana, you've got a list of questions here for the MSU Billings University in terms of your experiences with World War II, what you did before the war, and its impact on some of the things after the war. So what
well, were basically, you doing? I was just a farm kid. I do have a close relationship with Billings, though, because I was born in Shepherd.
Yeah, you're right there.
And most people said, how did that happen? And I said, well, it was real simple. The crit came up faster than I did, so the doctor didn't make it.
See, so yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm just making them all mad. Yeah. But anyway, we had a farm west of Great Falls, and for practical purposes, that's where I was raised, until I decided to go to work at a smelter. I was going to
the smelter in Great Falls.
Big money in the smelter at Great Falls. Mm-hmm. And so I started there after I got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I, first thing I noticed was that was the biggest paycheck I'd ever seen in my life. I was taking $20 home a week.
Paycheck you'd ever seen. Probably the first one you'd saved, too.
Yeah, well, no, I had received checks before, but I was making 10 cents an hour working for a neighbor farmer.
Yeah.
Made the famous Leach's horseradish. Mm-hmm. You haven't lived till you had to grind
horseradish. Oh, grinding horseradish. Oh, my goodness.
But anyway, so, and I went to work, and the first thing I did was I got rid of my old 28 Chevy and got a 32 Chevy.
Mm.
And I really had a fancy car there.
First class, yeah.
And so I was driving it to the smelter from where I lived. Uh-huh. And everything's going fine, all of a sudden. I was working in the Brick Nation crew.
Mm-hmm.
They finally tried to call me a hod carrier, and I got 10 cents more an hour. So I was up to almost to $2 an hour working for it. And then I looked around in the bricklayers who I was working for. I checked with them, and they were getting 15 cents more an hour than I was.
Mm.
And I was brand new.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, you sure got a life here if you stick in here.
So, right.
So I stayed there for about a year and a half, 2 years, and then I said, I'm going to go. And I told my dad I was leaving. I'm going to go to school. He said, well, you're going to school. And I said, yeah, I'm going to go to school. What for? I said, because I don't want to be a bricklayer.
You know, that kind of an alternative, yeah. Okay.
And of course, I'd been in 4-H a lot, so I knew Scotty Cameron real well, who was our original county agent, Great Falls. So this, I had him in at Bozeman, and I used it.
Good for you.
I came down here with $400. That was supposed to last me for 4 years.
When was that? In
this is in 41.
1941, okay.
And I had no idea how it was going to cost. All I know is that I moved from paying $23 a month for board and room to batching with three other great homegrown kids from Sims. Like Claire Willits, who's still around, Ray Greer, he's now passed away, and Don Lee, who's passed away also. They had a new club up on 407 West Cox, and it was a bachelor's club, and we batched.
Batched and cooked your own food.
You did your own food, and if you were smart, you always tried to get whatever you want home with your laundry bag under your arm, hitchhike, bring it back full of food, too, along with the clothes that you cleaned up. And that way, if you brought a ham back or a chicken, you know, that added to your...
Sure.
So it was costing us about $6 a piece for the basement apartment a piece for us.
For the month. $6 for a month.
And then the rest of it came out about $9 for food.
Mm-hmm.
And we would do everything to get cheap food.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we used to go to the Ponto Bakery and talk to girls into day-old bread.
Sure.
Only she'd have to take it off the fresh rat.
Oh, you guys had churn.
We didn't know it. But anyway, so, and I was going to school, and I was enrolled in ROTC. Those are the days when you took it whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah, you had to take ROTC.
Yeah, that's right. And, It wasn't all bad. The only thing is, I still wanted to fly. I lived below the airport when I was in Great Falls. I used to see the airport all the time. And I was one of those kids that always, if I had a chance, I'd sneak across the river and go up to the airport. How about a ride, mister? I was always asking somebody for a ride. I always wanted to get up in the air.
But anyway,
I still wanted to, like the idea of flying. Mm-hmm. And I had always thought about it. Mm-hmm. So when I found out that I was going into the infantry, and some of the people that were caught, well, like Bill Ogle, who runs Canyon Noble,
yeah, the lumberyard,
the old boss man.
Yeah.
He was one of our instructors. Anyway, I could see that this wasn't what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went over to Butte and enlisted in the Army Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
The Army Air Force is what it is, what you call it.
Now we got to start over again. You were in college and getting ready to go to Butte. All right, so we got to start with going to start over again with when you went to Butte. Okay, Dana.
Okay, went over to Butte and took my. This is before I took my physical.
When I went over and enlisted.
And after I enlisted, I went back, and they told me I would be on 24-hour call. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school, and I had my call relayed to my mother in Great Falls, so that if they could find me, they could find her, and then she knew where to find me. So she called up one day, and I remember it was in Doc Fletcher's class, doing a rubber grasshopper dissected. I remember I took the grasshopper up to Doc Fletch, and I said, "Here, I'll be back in a couple of years, maybe to finish it, but right now I'm on my way to
if you take the grasshopper and put it on ice, huh?"
And so I went on over to Butte. Took my physical, and then I was called out right there when out of school. And I guess one of the things I was happy about was that some of the F's that I got didn't go with me after I left school under the conditions we left under.
Yeah, they put you in incomplete.
Yeah, they put an incomplete, and then they didn't charge it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I did get some credits. I got some what do you call it? Geometry, trig, learned how to use them. Book, you know.
Oh, yeah. The logarithms and all that stuff.
Which I didn't know anything about.
Which was going to serve you in the Air Force, probably.
But that's why I took them.
I
didn't care what the grade was, I just wanted to get the information. So.
Sure.
So then, from there I went shipped to, I had to run to Great Falls after my mother called me. In Bozeman, and I had to go back to Great Falls and take everything I owned. And I had borrowed the car, an old bottle of A that they weren't using, but I could use.
Mm-hmm.
I borrowed that and took it with me to school because I knew I was going to have to make a fast run home. Back home to get out. And that's exactly what happened. It was just a short time to be in Butte. Mm-hmm. They get on the plane.
This was in 1942.
Yeah. And then I went from there to Shepherd Falls, Wichita Falls, Shepherd Army Air Base.
Wichita.
This was just, like I said, it was a great big, huge recruit, you know, new volunteers and enlistees and all the different kinds were all shoved into this thing, but it was all Air Force for the most part. And they started to run us through all the kinds of exercises you have to do. I remember some of the stuff was red mud from curb to curb when it rained. And it's just as gooey as could be.
This was your first away from Montana.
Away from Montana. I knew what Gumbo was because I was raised around it, but I didn't know that it was all red.
All red goop, yeah.
But anyway, I got in there, and then, of course, I went to Wichita Falls. At Shepherd there, we did a lot of, it would be like Well, it's the same old break-in, you know, that you got to drill.
Yeah.
And the Air Force believes that if you're going to be a good officer, you got to be able to drill troops. So you have these DIs that are working on you all the time.
And, of course, that was part of the Army at that time.
Yeah, it was Army Air Force.
Army Air Force, yes.
But anyway, so I got through there and went on, and then we went to San Antonio Aviation Cadet Center, which was in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
And that, now that's Lackland Air Force Base, as they call it.
Okay.
And it's still one of the headquarters for training air crews.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through the system, class system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, lower class and upper class. Upper class are chewing on you all the time.
Yeah.
When you get to the upper class, you're chewing on them all the time. The lower class. It's one of those
work your way up, now it's my turn.
You learn how to eat square meals.
Sure.
If you want to go down to the Air Force Academy sometime, watch it. It always makes my field go right out to those guys that are sitting there eating square meals because they're the ones I had to eat.
Yeah.
And they had a lot worse than I had. But, so then we went through pre-flight, they call it pre-flight 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then as soon as we got out of pre-flight, then you were shipped to, we went to Ballinger, Texas,
mm-hmm.
and took the primary there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were flying PT-19s, which mm-hmm. is a monoplane, and a good little airplane, could do aerobatics like you can't believe.
Is that right?
And I always remember this red-headed Texas boy that lanky and lean and can fly that airplane like you can't be. And he said, whenever you're in that back seat with me, I want you to be buckled in tight, because he says you never know when you might fall out.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out what he was talking about real quick, because the next thing you know, he's got us upside down. He's saying, keep that wobble pump going out there, so because he couldn't pump gas when you're upside down.
Oh.
So the wobble pump pumps gas for you. That's the same thing you do when you start the airplane. Mm-hmm. You see, you got to get the gas pumped up. So I found out what he meant by the signal. But then it was a great experience because I learned how to fly. And I remember that I came in one day and I finally had a little trouble getting lined up always, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Until one day he says, you know, we're going to go right through that fence over there. And the only way you're going to stay out of that fence is if you keep your foot on that damn rudder. And hard. I don't want to, we don't need to go through that fence.
Uh-huh.
So he taught me why the fence was there.
Yeah,
stay away from it.
Stay away from it. Push hard.
But anyway, I always remember, I think that was about, well, I knew it was about 7.5 hours of training, mm-hmm. of all kinds of training, aerobatics,
mm-hmm.
landing, yeah. stalls,
mm-hmm.
just about anything you want to talk about. We learned him right there in Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up and said to me one day, he says, well, I'm going to let you fly this thing yourself. He said, I'm tired of being scared of what you're going to do next. He said, so take it. I said, what do you mean? He said, solo. And I thought, do it. God, that's wrong. You're supposed to have 8 hours
mm-hmm.
of flying time before mm-hmm. solo. But anyway, he said, go ahead and go. So I took off. Trying to think of all the things.
Yeah.
Take off. Remember the fence over there. Don't run into that. Go down mm-hmm. the center. And when you land, you got to keep remembering. If you don't, you have troubles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, I found it. Got up in the air all right. No problem there. And when I came back, I forgot all about what he taught me about landing. And the first thing I knew, I had a big old fancy ground loop. And a ground loop is where one wing dips down. It's not flying as fast as the outer wing is mm-hmm. when you get up, see?
Uh-huh.
So the outer wing wants to fly, and that's what makes your ground loop.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't like ground loops.
No.
They're hard on planes, and they're hard on people,
uh-huh.
especially an instructor who thinks you should know better. Anyway, he sat over in the shack, and I kept looking at him whether he was going to come out there on an auxiliary field.
Uh-huh.
He didn't move for a long time. He just let me sit there. And you can't walk away and leave a plane, because
yeah.
that's against the rules.
Uh-huh.
Finally, he came out and said, you better hang in there, a little prop this,
mm-hmm.
on the prop, and start it up again. And he let me fly the rest of the way. And from then on, I was soloing, which was fun. Because
you didn't do a ground loop again, I bet.
No, I didn't do any more ground loop. I stay away from that ground loop business. I did do one other first thing that scared me. We were flying, and I was with a fellow by the name of Rust. And we were, had been sent to this auxiliary field together. Both of us went out individually, so we always had two kids out, same area, not to run into each other, but to keep watching so you know what's going on. And we made some fancy statement about we were learning how to do three-turn spins. And that means you got to get out of them. You know, once you get into a spin, you got to get out of the spin. And there's only one way to do it. That's you pop your stick and then you hit the throttle. And if you do it right, come right out in a little dive and you're just like normal. So we argued about who was going to do it. And I got the last chance to beat his. So I was going to stretch it out, and I just touched the throttle a little bit, which speeded up my
spin.
Not having brains enough to know that when I speeded up the spin, I also speeded up the time it would take to come out. So when I popped the stick, hit the rudder, nothing happened.
Oh.
And that really taught me something. By the time I got out of there, I was so thankful. I thought, now if I jump out of there, if I take my parachute and leave, I'm washed out.
Yep.
If I drive her into the ground, I'm washed out. So, while I'm thinking about it, flew itself out.
It's like the current.
About 500 feet,
though. Yeah. Oh, boy.
So I was happy. We never did tell anybody what happened to us. He was scared to death. He's going to have to see me, you know, going to tell him I crashed.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, that's part of living as a cadet, I guess.
Sure.
And then from there, I went on to basic training at the Volte Vibro. As a matter of fact, there's a couple of them out here at the airport in Bozeman.
Is that right?
At Belgrade. And we called them Volte Vibro because they're big, huge plane and had some bad characteristics that you learned real fast if you didn't in trouble. And as I think I had mentioned once, that I saw one of these trucks, Bowboy, come back in with a plane on it. He said, "Well, another dead instructor. Kid must have froze on the controls, and he couldn't get him out of the spin or something." Anyway, so you learn that life is pretty tenuous.
That's right. Your life is.
No. And then I went from there to advance, and advance we get two engines, and you get two engines, then you got two things to control instead of one, you got two airspeeds to watch, I mean, you know, fuel gauges to watch and all that stuff. So you got to adjust your, so you don't have, so you don't have them both, but your throttle's adjusted, so you, you don't have to have them square, you have to have them in adjustment, so yeah. Otherwise you get a yaw and a G all the time that you don't have tied up together. And then from advance is where we receive our commission. I was at Lubbock,
Texas. You got Texas, your commission.
And I went from there to...
That would have been late 43 or early 44? Late 43.
And then from there I went to training in
B-17.
And the 17, we flew lots of instructor time. And then from then on, there's two or three pilots who were instructor, and then one would fly for a while, another would fly for a while. We're going to shoot landings. They'd shoot landings, and another guy sit in the seat and just shoot and go around and keep doing what they're trying to do. As much training time into as they could in the time that you're going to be there. And of course, what they want to do is make sure you can fly when you left it. 17, because they were going to give you a crew, and that's just exactly what they did. I ended up with a few days of leave, which I couldn't get home.
Yeah, those days you wasn't jet plane going home.
No, there weren't any planes going anywhere.
So no.
You go down center around the airport and go in, but you might get, why not get out? So, so I went ahead and stayed. Then we, after we came back, when that's when we were. Orders sent us to a place called Plant Park, Florida. And what it was an old racetrack. Well, it's still there. It's a racetrack. Right close to Tampa, Florida. And And that's where we had a square tents, yes, on top of the square logs. Windy and dirty and everything else, you know. And then we got into a hurricane situation, so they took a whole bunch of us out of the tents and took us down to the Floridian Hotel, which was like, oh, you know, you're just going to heaven.
You had a chance to live it up a little bit.
They had bars and everything else in there.
Whole package.
Women, the whole works.
Uh-huh.
And so we finally, you've got to learn who these crews are.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all new. You've never seen them before. You've got to remember what their name is, where they're from. Each one of you have to, you know, there's only way you've got to get to know each other. It's where you're from. Mm-hmm. I had an engineer, aerial engineer, was from Austin, Texas. And a radio operator was from Buffalo, New York. Navigator was from Falls Church. No, Falls River? Boston.
Mm. I think it's Falls River.
Falls River, yeah. It's another one that's next to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then one guy from east to up on the Massachusetts, way out.
Way out there.
Way out there. Somebody's, yeah. My memory isn't like it used to.
Yeah. None of us have it anymore like we used to.
Forget more than I need to learn. But anyway, and we had an armor gunner who came from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He was a lumberman, in other words, a logger.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. And we had two, the tail gunner was a little guy from Norwalk, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 17.
Yes.
It didn't take long for the kids to find out that I was an old man.
Yeah, you were
21 years old.
21 years old. You were the old boy.
I was the old man.
You were the old man of the outfit.
And and then during this orientation, getting acquainted time, you were doing a lot of flying.
Mm-hmm.
You had to fly missions. Mm-hmm. Like you had air to air, which meant they had to shoot targets, mm-hmm, from the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they had air to ground, which means that they were having to hit stuff on the ground, and like a straight mission. Mm-hmm. And we had night navigation. And we had all kinds of setups. But then we had to fly formation with each other. That was always hairy. And you always wondered if the guy was having to fill in on your wing or you on his. Knew what he was doing.
But that would be a nerve-wracking sort of a thing when you're learning that.
You know, the reality of it is that every one of us was about in the same boat.
Sure.
And we hadn't been well, we'd better keep our wing tucked in there, because that's why they were training us to do it.
Sure.
And then we found out why we did that when we got to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then after we did our all of our training, and as soon as we get a phase done, they would shut everything down till those had all of them. They wouldn't start a new phase till everybody started at the same time.
Okay.
And that meant you were in Gulfport, Mississippi. Guess what? New Orleans is just 50 miles down the road.
And there is transport.
And there is transport. Buses. Yeah, all kinds of buses. They were all standing around waiting to go. And New Orleans was, at that time, was a wide open town.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in the Navy, mm-hmm, you had a curfew on you. But the Air Force didn't have it. There was not that many people there that they were about.
No.
The Navy was right there.
That's right.
I remember we had this friend, and he met this friend in the Navy, and we had to get him some uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had uniforms.
Yeah.
Spare uniforms. So we got him Air Force
uniform, so he could go out.
But he still had those funny black shoes on.
Yeah,
and nobody saw it.
Yeah.
And he stayed out with us for a while.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it was fun to go into.
Oh, yeah.
And I had some great times in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating old city.
It is. And when they were there, it wasn't like it is now.
Oh, of course
not. You didn't have all that lift after this. Mm-hmm. You had, there was probably some there, but you didn't have the
infrastructure.
But anyway, so then the next thing you know, we get our mission crew set up so we could do everything we're supposed to. Like ditching an airplane,
mm-hmm.
and get out of the airplane in 30 seconds, and they timed you. That meant I went out the little window on the side of the airplane,
mm-hmm.
17 inch, got a little window mm-hmm. up there, and I caught that. You pull it back, and you're out. And you think, well, when I looked at it, now
yeah,
I couldn't even get my legs struck.
That I go say, you're a little tinier than that. That's not a real big window either.
No, it isn't. Well, I weighed about 165 pounds, I think.
Mm-hmm.
At that time.
Compared to the 200 I carried.
And you had to fasten your seat belt with all your clothes on to get out.
And then, of course, then I was mentioned once, I think. I knew we were going to England because mm-hmm. we were doing this training period. We were using UK, what they call United Kingdom radio procedure, mm-hmm. which meant when you're over there in their country, you play their game.
Sure.
Because that's the way
the way their system would work. The people are
running those towers and those things, they
mm-hmm.
they expect you to do things the way that you're supposed to do.
Yep.
And then, of course, then we ended up, after we got over there, we threw our own ship over. We got to pick it up in Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to swing the compass, which means you go out and check to see how the compass
mm-hmm.
sets up. With different headings, you know, how's what kind of lag you got, so
mm-hmm.
that you have to worry about. And then if we get, as soon as we get the thing, then everybody had to go down and get a picture taken.
Oh, okay.
Before you went overseas, so.
Yeah. Now, which one is you?
Can't tell.
I'll get my glasses on here. Golly, I want to say this one here.
Yeah, this one here.
Okay. Neat.
This is the youngest kid. This is the lumberman. And this is the engineer. This is the radio operator, tail gunner, navigator, bombardier, pilot, and pilot.
So the total crew on the B-17 was 9 people then.
Yeah. And if you ended up with a Mickey operator, then you might have 10 sometimes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we were a good crew. We flew a lot of time together and went overseas together.
Mm-hmm.
And put in some hair-raising times over there.
Okay.
Yeah. There was no
cookies, cookies and creams once you get over there.
But we did fly that slow time all the time.
To break in those old engines.
Those engines that were had to be redone on the mission,
mm-hmm.
on the mission before, but wipe something out,
so they put it in.
And they wouldn't take it on the mission until they'd slow, what they called slow time. You had to fly so long.
How many hours did you have to fly?
That was about 3 hour flight, I think.
To get them broken in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you'd go so long at a certain speed of setting and change.
It's just like a lot of those old automobile engines we used to have.
Yeah.
You bought a new car, you had to drive
it in.
Break it in for 1,000.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
So we found out what it was like to be in England.
See, your grandmother was from Germany.
Yeah, she was from Germany. And I remember saying that when I found out I was going, I told her. She said, well, I just hope so you don't miss my village.
Miss my village, yeah.
I said, Grandma, don't worry. There's no railroad in there, so there's no reason for us to go there.
Big go to that
all
spot.
Wind up and down the mountains.
There's a reason to go there, probably when you get later, but okay.
It says here, what did you think about politics? Well, I was raised in an era that didn't know there was anything but Democrats.
Community Hoover.
I remember when we hoovered, they said, but I remember I was in 20th grade when Hoover was elected in
mm-hmm.
28.
Yeah.
And we always had all these songs about all these things about good enough for Democrats and something else good enough for Republicans, you know. So I didn't have any political leaning. My dad was a Farmers Union member, and I got gas at the Farmers Union station
mm-hmm.
where I was working. But I don't think I have any further limits. I've learned a lot about Roosevelt since I got out.
Yeah,
the last few years when they're saying, oh yeah, he didn't tell you all the stories. He didn't tell you everything. Now, they're an embedded TV man right with the...
Well, yeah, you'd have you.
So then you could see what's going on every
day. That's right. Yeah.
Didn't have anything like that. Military service was not a strange thing to my folks. My dad was in the First World War as an American.
He was.
But he couldn't speak very much English. So he didn't have a... He ended up being a cook.
That must have been difficult in World War One, but there was a little...
Still, we still had a lot of it.
In World War Two, still had a lot of guys with real thick...
Yeah. Sure. A lot of Wisconsin and
Northern Minnesota. They just couldn't speak very good English.
So my family, of course, when I decided to go to school, my father said, well, I've done the best I could. He said, I got to first grade, and I got you kids all out of high school now. I don't think I can do much better than that.
You're on your own from here, aren't you? Right.
So. And I think that... I think there's no question about what we're going to do in my family. Or you want to know that my sister went into the aircraft in California
as a
building planes. And my brother went into the Navy. And he was flying out of Sandpoint, Idaho, and also in Washington there. And I was in the Air Force. So
we were a military family.
My mother always had it to me. The flag, three blue stars on it. I hope to never be gold.
Yeah,
it'll never be a gold one.
Golden, that's right.
I don't know. I think as I said, I think that politics was not a thing that was very important in our lives.
No,
because I remember those years were tough.
Yeah, it was survival. It wasn't politics. Out in the rural areas, anyway.
We did an awful lot of work, but not much. But we did have full lunch pails. Lousy clothes.
Yeah, that's right.
Patch. And I always remember those squad officer shoes they used. But the tongue would come back up. Many years later, those were quite cheap.
Oh yeah, then later on, yeah. When you could afford something else.
I think that my impression of what was going on in the service was about like everybody else's. I was around Air Force and stuff like that. And going to school here, they were talking about those years that I was in 2 years of military here. There's a lot of stuff going on about what was going, what
activities
were around, where they were at. And we got to run into some people here that have been in military, like some of them have been in the Philippines.
Sure.
Some of those insurrections and so forth. That were attached to lots of men here. So I don't know if my perceptions of war was not a case of a perception. I just thought, how to go.
Yeah,
if I'm going to go, I would like to do something I'd like to do. And that's
why.
There were a means to do it.
Where were you at when Pearl Harbor happened? Most everybody remembers.
I was in
where they were.
I was right up here in Student Union.
The big
what do you call those radios?
Big console radio.
Right inside the store of the old Student Union. And that's when we heard about it.
That's when you picked it.
So we knew whatever he wanted to tell us, we knew it.
That's right. Where they wanted to let go, you knew about it.
And I don't know, my brother was a machinist mate, aviation machinist mate, on a TBM, the Avenger, which was a fighter bomber.
Did he go in before or after you did?
He went in after. Well, he went in just about the same time.
About the same time.
He went in with permission from friends.
Signed his
thing. He went in at
17. Again, not unusual for
that
time period. A lot of people signed up if they could.
Well, I didn't know anything too much about what Germany was like, but I was starting to learn about it after we found out what, you know.
Sure.
But then you still don't learn about what's really going on, because you learn what they want you to know.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is, and you don't sit there and argue.
That's right. And communications at that time was not what they are today. So.
And that's hard for the kids to understand. We didn't have all that.
Yeah, difficult. Yeah, didn't have all
we
that.
Didn't have any problems with it because we weren't concerned.
Yeah,
we never got involved in it, I guess.
And your communication with to home was via letters.
Well,
very seldom with a phone call.
My father was happened to have be a good friend of D.K. Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Because one year when he was in homestead in north of Fort Benton, he got himself wanted to get elected to the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went around with D.K. when he was doing his tour of Soto County and was helping and all that. And so that was about the extent of my... And then when D.K. decided that we didn't want a war, he probably was the smartest man going. Nobody knew it. He was against it. He was running against the wrong, the wrong system.
Uh-huh.
But same thing with our good friend, the lady.
Oh, yeah. Gal who voted against it.
Yeah.
I can't remember her name right now. Her statue's over in Illinois.
As far as isolation was concerned,
Rankin,
yeah. As far as isolation was concerned, I lived in Great Falls, which was a dump-off spot for all the equipment going to Russia. The Lend-Lease equipment. So I saw T-39s, T-38s, and I saw all these at Bay Falls, and I was working on when they was building the runways in that base there.
Okay.
And I saw all this stuff that was flying through there and walking across the sweet grass border, and then the Russians would take it from there and go.
Go with it.
And so that was, you knew something about it.
You know, something was going on.
There was something, equipment was going on there to fight a war. And when you see equipment going, there must be something going on.
That's right.
And you may not know the whole idea of what was going on. And as far as isolation is concerned, I had no feeling of isolation whatsoever. Like I said, my folks were German, but they had left that country because they wanted a better place to raise their families and came over here. And they didn't want to be... What do they call them? Kaiserville slaughter?
Yeah.
Fodder?
Fodder, yeah, that's what, A lot of people came.
We knew about that. And I don't think I had any real feelings about it. Plus, like I said, I don't want to go fly.
Yeah.
You can't fly, there's no...
You can't fly,
you don't get going to be in the war,
That's right.
Heritage and so forth, that had not much to do with mine. As I said, my grandmother and grandparents came from Germany, and I knew it, but that's as much as I knew about it.
It wasn't
and as
issue.
I got over it, when I got over there, after the war, this place I went to was, of course, up to where the folks came from, and down called Bonnybach. I learned already that Germans didn't speak to English ones very often, but I went over to the church and I found out where all the shrubs that were in that area that had been killed in World War One and World War II.
Well,
right on.
Well,
I didn't do this until in the 80s.
In the year when you went back over
when
in the 1980s,
I had kids over there.
Well, it wasn't unusual coming out of the Depression not to be all concerned, and flying was just starting to come in.
Yeah,
airplanes were... Not a lot of them around.
A lot of barnstorming in Great Falls. I remember seeing the planes coming in to the old Vance Airport, which is where the Great Falls and the garbage on the north side. And they had this big air show.
Yes.
And I always remember my dad, I don't know where he found the money, but he got a chance to put us into German Triumph.
You had a chance.
One of those old Ford Tri-Motors.
Yeah,
Ford. It's called the Monarch Foods.
And
the Monarch label on it. So we got to have a ride in that thing. The greatest thing that ever happened to me. I was just a little kid, and I looked down there, and I see this fence coming up, and I thought, God, when the
Well, those old tri-motors, there were some of them around for a long time.
They were well built.
You're back to England now. You were doing your slow time for breaking in the engines. So then how kind of
then we started
went
doing
there on?
Missions. Then you end up with a mission. They call it, well, if you're in the old club, which a lot of us might have been, you know, go down to the old club.
Mm-hmm.
After you've been slow timing or something like that, go to the old club, have a beer. And see what's going on. Just cooking around there. And then all of a sudden, the pirate's face on the bar at the old club would be turned so you couldn't see his face. Uh-huh. That meant no more drinking.
No more drinking.
It's a mission. It's a mission tomorrow.
Mission tomorrow, and that's it.
It may be pre-dawn. You never know until they decide when to call you. So that's when I found out what a pre-dawn mission was.
Okay.
And that's scary all by itself because you've got yourself up there. And if you're a lead plane, and you're a top lead, that means you've got a person on this wing, person on this wing, one above you and one below. You know, you've got three around there. And you've got to worry about them as well as yourself, and you've got somebody else that you're flying off of, which is probably a low lead or a high lead. It's up there, whichever way you happen to land. And so you've got these problems with how you put yourself aligned. And if you can imagine, there towards the end of the war, when you were flying, that you had as many as 1,500
bombers flying,
leaving England roughly the same time to make this bombers team.
You get all done packages
together. They all got to be packaged together, get off the ground. And so here you are circling around England, and each one of these got it's what they call a puncher beacon. One beacon there, and you had a beacon over here, and you flew that beacon. And one needle would turn around this one, and one needle would turn around this one. So you always had the same spot, and that's where you stayed, because if you didn't stay there, somebody else is going to run right smack at you. You had no business outside. So.
But your first mission, how many planes went up in that?
Oh, I think that we, my first mission was, I know what they did.
Your book from
now,
your
this
squadron.
Is a book from the 34th. I belong to the 34th Bomb Group.
It
was in the, called Heavies, you know, Heavy Bombers. And the 34th was in the 3rd Division. And General LeMay was our commander. When he took over, we were there. He didn't have any more 24s flying for him. 24s all went to 2nd. So we had the 1st and 3rd were flying with 17, so you had both kinds of planes flying at the same time. And
so when you started out, you didn't fly the big groups, but as it went on, then you got into the 1,500 planes at a crack.
Yeah, well, you were in the bomber stream, always.
Always in the
stream. It might be a little less, it might be
bigger,
take off, and then they have first, second, and third target area.
Okay.
So what you did is you went in the morning, a pre-dawn takeoff, you'd be woke up bright and early, and you had to go down and get something to eat.
Sure.
And the Air Force ate great.
Very good. Yeah, good
Air Force. They ate good. They had eggs and toast and all the good stuff. They used to make toast on the charcoal.
Ears,
you know, little
okay, yeah, yeah.
And good eggs.
Mm-hmm.
You had anything you wanted if they had available, but you were well fed. And so, and then from there, you went to what we call the briefing block. And at the briefing block, they usually gave a briefing to the whole works.
All at
the same time. Then they would let the airman and the sergeant go over to a different side, and they would be given the information for their duty on this thing, and then your officers would go over here to find out just exactly where the IP, the initial point, was coming, and when you when it turned, you know, we would come over and, anyway, so you make this IP, and then from the IP you head in, mm-hmm. and then you get your automatic pilot set up so that the bombardier can fly the plane
from, as you're going over
from the front on mm-hmm. the old northern bomb site, which is down below us, but he would fly the plane as soon mm-hmm. as you put your autopilot on, and he had control of it. You could take it away from him by hitting the switch, but you didn't want to take it away from him. Mm-hmm. You want him to stay on that, get the drift, and make sure your bombs are going to go down. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you wasted your time going.
Sure.
It's kind of rough. Yeah. Waste your time doing that.
That's right. You don't want to do that.
So I found what FLAC was, and I'd heard about it,
mm-hmm.
but it was vicious for us. And towards the end, as I flew the last missions, we had lots of flak. Mm-hmm. And what was happening was, as Germany was pulling their forces mm-hmm. in tighter and tighter and tighter, they brought all the guns with them.
Okay.
So that they had all these guns sitting on them, and every one of those Germans could shoot.
Mm-hmm.
They were excellent shooters.
Mm-hmm.
And they would track us.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got somebody tracking on you, everybody wanted to figure out a way to get away from there.
Sure, you got to get out of here.
Get out of there. But anyway, if you get on, once you got on the bomb run, you
stayed. The
bombardier had it. You couldn't leave because you had other people around you doing the same thing, and mm-hmm. you start to bail out.
Mm-hmm.
You're in trouble, and then if you have fighters, you have.